Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 20th, 2003. Today's session is entitled Joy, Celebrating Right Relationship, presented by Gloria Jost and Mary Jo Shavs.
Joy and gladness.
You are justice and moderation.
You are all our riches.
And you suffice for us.
You are beauty.
You are gentleness.
You are our protector.
You are our guardian and defender.
You are courage.
You are our haven and our hope.
You are our faith.
Our great consolation.
And together,
you are our eternal life,
great and wonderful Lord,
God Almighty, merciful Savior.
When Gloria shared that this praises of God was from the time after Francis received his stigmata, that means that the wounds of Christ, Francis received that. And that was very near the end of his life. So you have a real developed sense of his theology in this particular praises of God, just like his Canticle of the Sun that we talked about earlier. And I find myself often reflecting on these because they're just so much a part of how Francis and Claire saw and experienced God. And, you know, to say, you know, you are humility, you are rest. And one line that is sometimes put in there that we think was included was, you are enough for us. Francis, one writer would put it this way, that all of Francis's life, God was hollowing out Francis's soul. And this would be true of Claire as well. Their souls were being hollowed out. And then, eventually, they could say, God is, and that's enough. So, though the order is falling apart at the end of Francis's life, though there's very little left, though he only has a few friends, he can say, God is, that's enough. And Claire, who waited until 2 weeks before she died to get her way of life approved by the church, can say, God is, that's enough. I think that just sort of capsulizes, in a sense, this whole piece of Francis Sinclair. We'd like to review a bit of what we've talked about through this week. And for those of you who are new, very shortly you're going to have an opportunity to sit with us and we'll go through the handouts. So this may be new information for you, but certainly information for the rest of us that is not new. We began with humility, that sense of living in right relationship with oneself. We told the stories of Francis embracing the leper, of Claire being able to look in the mirror and see herself reflected back through the Christ. And we said that the key point there was recognizing how beautiful God is in order that we might recognize our own beauty, that all are made in the image and likeness of God, and that is the truth. So we covered up that piece of paper we had that had the, you know, this is what's good about me and this is what I don't like. And we covered up that column of the not liking. And we tried to look at the goodness of God, the truth of who we are.
The following day we looked at being sister and brother to one another and to all of creation extending out throughout the cosmos. The two life examples that we looked at from Francis and Claire was with Francis, how he invited his brothers in that were living with him to join this very hungry friar, a friar who was so hungry that he woke up in the middle of the night. And the feast that Francis prepared in the midst of community, a very wonderful example of being sister and brother, that sort of familial relationship with his own brothers. And then the life of Claire, all of her life with her own sisters, washing their feet, refusing to have a hierarchical relationship with her own sisters, even though she was considered the abbess of her own order, her group of sisters. So when we looked at being sister and brother to all of creation, it was recognizing that we are related to everything, deeply interconnected with everything, and that we are then responsible, delightfully responsible, for keeping that relationship, one of brother and sister, to that which is animate and inanimate, our environment, animals, all of creation, and people.
Yesterday, we moved to the theme of living in right relationship with all of creation. And we talked about, at a very deep level, the sense of what it means to be a peacemaker. And we looked at the complexity of that reality, spending time with Francis's prayer, "Make me an instrument of your peace." And we looked at gospel there and tried to understand at a little more deep, a deeper level, the sense that in the midst of conflict, in facing enemies, be they within ourselves or around us, that we are talking about a third way, rather than fighting or running away, to come to those encounters with a sense of nonviolence. And we looked at our own call to be an instrument of peace And that is what we have written on these scrolls.
And so we come to today. The title of today's gathering is Joy, Celebrating Right Relationship. We chose the word joy intentionally. If there are two words that I would like for you to take with you that really capture the Franciscan spirit, it is being in relationship and joy. It is so true that every order, that means order as in Catholic orders, sisters and brothers, like the Franciscans and the Servites and the Carmelites, they all have their charism or kind of an overall flavor of who they are. And I have been around many, and I can tell you, you always know when you're with the Franciscans. They are the loudest, most raucous group. They really are. They are full of joy. The energy is incredible.
And they always have something to eat.
They do. It is so true. True to form. It isn't Franciscan if you can't eat with it. So we have brought bread with us today. And we're going to be sharing this bread together, just pulling off the common loaf and enjoying. But before that, we're going to now break into our small groups and share together. First of all, I invite you, if you're entirely new, this is the first time you've come to a session, if you would come to this circle right now. And for the rest of us, if you would divide into groups of three, but don't do that quite yet. I'll tell you what this is all about. I don't remember who the wise person was on the very first day who talked about we only have a thimbleful. What an incredible true image, perhaps, of where we began. Well, I doubt if the thimble is going to hold what we have now. But we're going to share out of our own thimbles today. And so in your groups, share the fruits of what you have received. What's in your thimble? What is in your thimble now? As you hold this whole week and we bring it to some kind of closure, that's what we invite you to share with one another. And as you do that, you're going to get a hunk of bread to share with one another. So go ahead and divide in your groups of three for the next 15 minutes. You'll get a delightful opportunity to share with one another. We've got a big, abundant God. So we had to bring a huge loaf of bread over to share. If at any time you need to nibble in the morning, it's yours, it's ours.
I'm sure the chipmunks would love
it. Oh, they're going to enjoy it too, yes. Waiting in here.
Thank you. These sheets that I'm passing out now are just for Elder Postel. So,
oh, I can share.
Go ahead. Okay. Come back to this. Large group sharing. Okay, what's in your thimble? So, for those of you who have been here all along and enjoyed this whole experience, what is in your thimble? We started out by introducing ourselves and saying, well, this is what we know about Francis and Claire. What do you know now? So we're opening up the floor here, opening up the dance floor to say, what are you dancing about? You know, what is it you know now that really touched your heart from your discussion? So feel free to share.
And when you share, I'm going to really encourage you to speak into this mic so that it can be part of what is taped. Not to intimidate you or anything. That would be hard for this group to be intimidated.
So speak up.
Who will be first?
Anything that you share in your little group.
Yes.
We had a couple of common experiences with people who just smiled at us, and these people were in both cases they had nothing. They were just smiling to make other people happy. I mean, that was, in one case, that was a person's job, he felt. And I think that's what joy is, you know, to give joy, to spread it to other people, not just keep it for yourself.
Don't be shy. What'd you learn?
I think I learned that intellectually you can know a lot of things, but once you start to try to do them, it's a great deal harder to do that, and that it wasn't easy for Francis and Claire either, and I had occasion to find out it was hard for me to behave that way, even here, hearing all of this. And the person who I was talking to, however, was very open and kind and compassionate. And personally, it made me realize that it's going to be a lot of work to be a real brother or sister.
You know, it's that sort of thing that we experienced yesterday with the day before, the influx of the children. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace.
Well, I think the thing that I've enjoyed is seeing what a simple life that Francis and Claire led. And as the three of us were talking about the complications of all the different denominations and beliefs and the things that might separate us, probably the good Lord is looking down and saying, oh my goodness. So that was mostly our discussion, the simplicity. Wouldn't it be nice to get back to that and to put it across?
You know, Francis, when people wanted to join Francis in his community, he never intended to start a community. He just wanted to live the gospel. And he turned around and had all these brothers following him. So he said, well, I guess I've got to do something about this. So he founded a community. But whenever anyone came to him to join him, his only question was, are you willing to live the gospel? No matter where they came from, no matter whether they were Christian or not. If they said yes, he said, come on in. Even though in those days women weren't supposed to enter, you know, or come onto the property of the monastery where men were gathered, if they were a religious order. So Francis just gave them another name. So we have this very rich lady from Rome, and she is very good friends with Francis. He's dying and he wants her there. So he named her Lady Jacoba. In she comes, Brother Jacoba, and she's buried in the same place he is buried in Assisi.
Wait, was she the one that made those cakes that he liked so much?
Those almond cakes. When he died, that's what he wanted, almond cakes. So she brought them. See, you gotta have
friends
even when you're dying.
I think Mary Jo just said something that puts the whole days in back into the symbol, and that is, are you willing to live the gospel?
Well, to me, the two operative words that we've learned this week are humility and love.
And to those words, we should add joy.
If you meet a Franciscan who's not smiling, give it to him. I don't deserve the name. Some of you have been to Assisi and you said you met a few grumpy ones. You're not living the spirit. Anyone else?
Can add hope. Seeing the example of two peace-loving persons in a really violent world are a hopeful example to me that we could strive at least to live a peaceful life.
Pretty full of thimbles, I'd say. What would you say? Mm-hmm. You know, there's this story we used to be told as children. We were worried about, you know, when we go to heaven, you know, how happy will we be? And our teachers used to say to us, well, you know, when you go to heaven, whether you have a bucket full of love or a thimble full, it'll be full. No matter what. And Francis and Claire would go on to say, full to overflowing. Because God is fountain fullness. God's love just keeps coming. To tell you a little story about that. I love to tell stories in case you haven't noticed. This was not my experience as a teacher, but another teacher was telling me this story. She was out she taught in an inner city school, and many of the children had never been to the ocean. So she took them to the ocean. And for most of them, they just stood there. Because they had never seen this much water coming in and coming in, coming in. So they were all standing there just looking. So finally she decided, well, you know, it's time for lunch. We better come together. So she says, come on now, we're going to have lunch. So they all came except this one little boy. And he was still standing there. So she went up to him and she says, come on now, we've got to have lunch. And he says, it just keeps flushing and flushing. Never forgotten that story. You know, it's like the fountain fullness of God. It just keeps coming and coming and overflowing and overflowing. There is no end. So whether you have a big bucket full of love, or a big bucket full of knowledge, or a thimble full, it's full. And it's overflowing. Can I go in now?
Yes, please.
So now this is just for Elder Hostel. So if you're not in the Elder Hostel group, you don't need to take one of these pages. One of the things that is very important to Gloria and I is that we hear from you about how this has been for you. Because we do this kind of work, retreat work and the like, all over the country. So we want to be sure that what we're doing is really touching the people we're serving. And so we're giving you this evaluation form to give you an opportunity to give us some feedback in writing. We'd like to take this on the road, so to speak. We'd like to make this workshop available in many different forms. So if you would, sometime today, take the time to fill out that form And by the time you return for Don's class here at 3 o'clock, if you would be sure and put it in this basket, which will be here in this room, that would be very, very helpful to us. Now, it's just for Gloria and I. It's not for Elder Hostel. Elder Hostel is going to give you another form to fill out to evaluate the whole experience of this particular Elder Hostel. This is just for the two of us to help us know what is really working, as well as what you might suggest that we, how we might continue to develop this particular workshop. Is that okay with everybody? Okay, now, some of you have said to us, but we did sort of give a synopsis of this at the beginning. Some of you have said, well, tell us about yourselves. Tell us who you are. So we thought, well, let's do the life of Gloria and her ministry and the life of Mary Jo and her ministry and then what we do together. So we're going to just take a little bit of time, not a lot. I don't want to bore you with our lives, but just a little bit of time to share a little bit of that personal information.
I grew up in Milledgeville, Illinois, a small town in the northwest corner of Illinois. The southern road coming in says the population is 1,200. And if you come in from the easterly way, it says 1,100. There you go. Lived on a farm, have two brothers, one older, one younger. I'm smack dab in the middle, and that probably explains a lot. Grew up in a Mennonite home. Went to a church 15 miles away. However, we were the only Mennonite family in this small town of Milledgeville. And that clearly began to define my life. My mother sometimes shakes her head and says, I don't know how this all came to be, that you are so ecumenical. And I said, you taught me well, Mom. And that is the truth. In our home, we had foster children. In our home, we had foreign exchange students. In our home, we often did food baskets and Christmas baskets for the poor in this little town of Milledgeville. In our home, we made Christmas bundles for those who didn't have enough. Christmas bundles, layette bundles for babies, school kit bundles for school-aged children. In our home, we took in people as hired hands, often almost like wayfarers coming through the town. In my home, my mother, we had lots of chickens, and we had an egg route, and so we took all our eggs to a town 15 miles away. That was the city of 16,000. And we would go door to door, and we would sell our eggs. We met up with Mexicans and Russians and people who worked in restaurants and people who worked in businesses. My life was inundated with people who were not just like of different faiths, different economic levels, and that has made me who I am today. So it's all my parents' fault, you understand. Some of you wondered if I'm married and if I have family. You betcha I am. I'm going to send around some pictures. I have a wonderful husband. His name is Gary, and he is a computer programmer, and he teaches. He's really a lover of languages, and so he teaches Greek and Hebrew at a university and some Old Testament courses. That's his real passion. And I'm also going to send around, not that I'm proud of my children or anything, but their senior pictures. It's Matthew, he's now 18, and Maria, who is now 20. Maria is at the University of Puget Sound. She's a junior, majoring in biology, and Matthew is going to the Southern Oregon University, and he doesn't have a clue what he wants to do. My ministry. From little on up, my mother often said I was far too serious about my faith, and it troubled her sometimes. I don't actually remember that. I was just me. But I do know that I was always part of Bible studies. I was always caring about talking about the sermons on Sunday morning. I cared very much about the life of the church, and particularly on Sunday nights when we would have our Sunday evening programs and missionaries would come and share their pictures of their ministry. I was very touched by that. I went on to go to college and teach school for several years. I taught first grade and fourth grade. And then my husband and I became a part of a church that had just started up in Wichita, Kansas. And there was something that stirred within us working with church planting. And so we also had a pastor who took us under his wing and saw something in us that we really didn't see at all at that point. From Wichita, Kansas, we moved to Madison, Wisconsin, so that my husband could finish his master's degree. And there, we actually were at the beginnings, the very nurturing beginnings of starting a Mennonite church in Madison, Wisconsin. It was at that point that I felt that I wanted to dabble in some more education, so I tried out a course at seminary, and lo and behold, I mean, did I jump in with both feet. I had no idea that what I was entering into was a senior-level course, and talk about a fish that is just trying to find her way. My gosh, the language was like out here. I didn't really have a clue. However, a professor wrote on my final paper, "I see something in you. I hope you consider coming back." It was those kinds of encouragements along the way that kept me moving towards the ministry. And so my husband and I moved to Elkhart, Indiana, and we attended Associated Mennonite Biblical Seminary. We both went to school, both had part-time jobs, and we had a family, and it was downright crazy. We did that for 4 years, actually ran out of money. Didn't quite finish our degrees, but went on and took our first call, and that was out here in Oregon. So we moved from Indiana to Oregon, and we were pastors, co-pastors, of a Mennonite church in Canby, Oregon. Those were very growing years for us. We pastored a small congregation, and it was during that time that across my desk, my pastor's desk, came the Franciscan Renewal newsletter. I had no idea what the Franciscan Renewal Center newsletter was. I read it, and I was very intrigued with a prayer group that was there. It was Lexio Divina and Centering Prayer, and I knew about those, and I was drawn to those forms of prayer, so I decided to come and be a part of that group, at least snoop it out. So I do come, and that is how I bumped into Mary Jo. On the very first day that I came, I walked down those steps, and in my most pastoral together way, I held my date book looking where the room was and what the title of this prayer group was, and I met Mary Jo, and I asked her where this was, and she pointed me to the way, and I think that after that group, I maybe saw her again, and I asked her about spiritual direction. I was looking for a spiritual director. I had one in Indiana, and I needed one now as a pastor. And Mary Jo said, "Well, I offer spiritual direction." And I said, "Okay, will you take me?" And she said, "Sure." And so we set up an appointment, and that began our journey, me being her spiritual director. Now, Mary Jo, being a very fine professional that she is, we kept that spiritual direction relationship very much like that for 3 years. And in the course of that, I discerned that I should leave the pastorate, and that there was another form of ministry that was calling me even more profoundly, and that was the ministry of retreat work, and exactly what I'm doing this week. I felt, again, like a fish out of water, because in my tradition, it just ain't hardly there. And I didn't know, it was a lonely, lonely journey, and yet I felt that I needed to tend to it and just be in it, and somehow this was going to be come into fruition. cushion in my life. After I left the pastorate, I began to work at the Franciscan Renewal Center, first as a volunteer, and then in a host of jobs. I washed dishes, I cleaned bathrooms, I made beds, I did laundry, I greeted people, and I began to help in the spiritual ministry area. At that time, Mary Jo was a quasi-boss of mine in that there was some overlap, and I began to recognize that I don't think it's good for me to have so many roles, her being my boss, spiritual director. So I discerned that it was time that I leave that relationship and find another spiritual director. Now, here's what I didn't know, and I'll let Mary Jo finish the story. She was going, yeah. Not that it wasn't a wonderful relationship, but Mary Jo was beginning to see, sense something in this relationship that, oh, what would it look like if we were doing ministry together? But because she was such a very, kept those professional boundaries, she never ever said a word to me. I was clueless, except that in my own heart of hearts, I was thinking the same thing. And one time in spiritual direction, I was so frustrated at being so alone in this journey. I said, Jo, I just know I'm supposed to be ministering with somebody. I am not supposed to be doing this alone, and I can't figure this out. And she was very listening and thinking, yeah. Anyway, end of that story, Mary Jo and I then began to grow a delightful friendship and co-ministry. And now you're seeing the fruits of that. I never thought it could be so good ministering with somebody from another tradition and recognizing the huge gift that that brings when we connect that which is so true out of our own traditions, remaining firmly planted in what we know is ours and yet bringing it together and saying, isn't this grand? I'm done.
Could add a little bit to those stories. Gloria used to tell me that when she was in seminary with her children, who were just tiny then, she had a cupboard, and the food was in the cupboard, and it was a low cupboard, and she'd just say, go for it. Peanut butter and baby food, because they were so busy. And then another thing that she didn't say, because perhaps it hadn't occurred to her at the time, but when I said yes to being Gloria's spiritual director, I was just fresh out of spiritual direction school. So, I had all these ideas about what it meant to be a spiritual director. And I guess what it said to me was that, I'm gifted in that area. So it was a real affirmation for me. She was the second person I'd ever had in spiritual direction. I don't know if you knew that. Telling you now.
Gal, she did darn good.
So you may be wondering how I got to where I am. I'm 10 years older than Gloria. I'm 58. So I was born when she was still in the mind of God. And I was born in Baker City, Oregon, which is in northeastern Oregon. It's a little tiny mining town. And its population is 10,000. And my friends used to say, well, probably 10 people and 9,000, 990 cows. A very small place, very much a farming community. As a family, we were not farmers, but both my sets of grandparents lived there, and they were both immigrants. Sets of immigrants. My mother's family came from Belgium, immigrated from Belgium, and my father's family immigrated from the Azores Islands near Portugal.
From
where? Azores. The Azores Islands near Portugal. And my grandparents on my father's side were their wedding gift. My grandmother's father had given them tickets on the Titanic because she was sort of the nobility in the Azores Islands. He wasn't. My grandfather wasn't. But they decided, my grandfather, he didn't want to dress up every day, and he didn't want to shave every day. So they had first-class tickets, too.
Wow.
They changed them, the tickets on a barge. And here I am today. So my family, I kind of have five brothers and sisters. I have three older sisters and two younger brothers. They're a Catholic, strong Catholic traditional family. And my mother and father wanted to name all of the girls after Mary. So my oldest sister's name is Marilyn, and then there's Margie, and then there's Marietta. And then there's Mary Jo, because by the time the fourth girl came along, they decided I better get the whole name, Mary. And they threw in Joseph there for good luck. And then my brother, Duane, was born 13 months after I was born. So we're like twins. And we had to be, because we had three older sisters. You know, you sort of had to hold your own. And then my youngest brother was born 7 years after I was born, and he's sort of the favorite, you know. In those relationships. We had a lovely, happy childhood. In this little tiny town. I went to a Catholic school for 12 years. The same Catholic school my parents had gone to, the same Catholic school that they graduated from, as well as my other brothers and sisters. And that school was run by our sisters, Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia. And you might say, well, how did you get all the way over here from Philadelphia? Well, the territory, Oregon was still a territory at the time. It had not even become a state. And the bishop of this territory was asking for sisters to come out here when our community was very young. This was 1859. And our mother general decided she'd send five of them out here. So out they came, never having left the East Coast, and being afraid they were going to be, you know, captured and everything else by the what they called at the time the Indians. Well, they got here, and the priest of the parish, Baker, met them and took them out to dinner, so they didn't think that was too bad. The next day, he sent them a bill. They were sure they were in the wrong place. So they wrote to the mother general and said, oh, this is terrible. They didn't even unpack their suitcases, trunks that were called in those days. They wrote a couple of weeks later, and she wrote back and said, remain in obedience. So there they stayed. 75 years later, when I graduated from St. Francis Academy, they were still there. This just this past year, the last there's only one of our sisters left in Baker now, but it's a very strong foundational place here of our community. So I grew up in this Catholic school for 12 years, and only had our sisters, my community, teaching me, except for one coach. That was it. So when I was in about the sixth grade, there was a little sign on our door that said, pray for vocations, and that meant pray for people to come to be sisters and priests. I thought about it, but it was just, that was just a little inkling. And then I went on with my life as usual, and that's in this little school with 11 people in my class, 7 boys and 4 girls, same kids I've been with since the first grade. We thought we had pretty good odds, these 4 girls here.
Yeah.
So when I got to be around probably junior or senior, I really began to think about, is this what I want to do with my life? This was in 1963. There were really 3 choices. You could either be a sister or a priest, you could get married, or you could remain single. Well, I didn't want to remain single, and I didn't want to, wasn't sure. I wanted to get married, but I wasn't sure about that. I'd seen my 3 sisters and all their travails. And and there was something very attractive about this religious community. So at the age of 17, I entered my community. Went from Baker City to Portland. I had never seen Portland. I'd never seen a skyscraper. The only skyscraper we had in Baker was the Baker Hotel, which was 10 stories high. That was it. So here I was, this country girl in the city. And I remember lying in bed that night, the first night I entered my community. It was very humid, and Baker is high desert, so I'd never experienced a human diet in my life. I'm laying there saying, oh my God, what did I do? Mom and Dad, brothers and sisters are gone, and here I am. And this year, 2003, marks the 40th anniversary of my time in this community. Now, for those of you who are married, you know that when you hit 40 years, there's been a few trials and tribulations along the way. And there has been a few trials and tribulations along the way. And my yes to this way of life, to choosing to be Franciscan in this way of life, is a yes I make every day. When I entered my community, when I got to Portland, I didn't know there were other communities in the world. Oh my goodness, there are other places I could have gone. You know, I could have been a Holy Name Sister, or Mary Knoll, or... So I was quite surprised. So I believe that was an act of God. So here I am now in religious life. I taught school for 26 years. I always wanted to be a teacher. So I taught math, and I taught religion, and I taught science in high school. And gave expression to my charism there in that I told my students I didn't teach math. I taught them math. I taught them religion. And that came home very clearly to me. Just, I used to say for adolescents, you have to wait about 17 years before they say thank you. That proved true. But I taught in Klamath Falls, Oregon for 6 years. There was one young woman there who really struggled with her math, really struggled. And I would help her every night after school, and she would come and we would work, and oh, it was just so hard. Last year, I was in Klamath in the 70s, last year, she wrote me a letter. She's teaching math at the Oregon Institute of Technology. And she writes to me to say, I only hope I teach math the way you did. So that's how I hope I've carried my charism to my students. Whenever I didn't know this phrase, you know, it's not Franciscan unless you're going to have lunch with it at the time. I always make cookies for them whenever they have tests. You know, so it's like sort of in your blood, this sense of Franciscanism. I left teaching in 1994 and because they were still coming in at 14 and I was, you know, getting a year older every year. I thought I'd better leave while I was getting out was good. And I also felt a strong call to spiritual ministry. I studied for 2 years, and then in 1996, I began my spiritual ministry at the Franciscan Renewal Center. And I love it. I love it. It's just, I know, since 1996, which means now I'm going on to my 7th year of doing this full-time, my spiritual directing practice, people that come to me for one-on-one work here at Holden and down there in Portland and the rest of the world, I have 50 people that come to me every month for spiritual direction. And they're all faiths, all traditions, some without a church, some with a church, some without even wondering if there's a God, young and old, all lifestyles, gay and straight, they're all there. They all come. And in that practice, I think what I've discovered is this ecumenical nature here of who I am as Francisco. And so it's very natural for us to move into our co-ministry. We began with simple things in the Renewal Center, and then we moved into an experience called Hermitage, Franciscan Hermitage, that we do together. That experience is something like this. It's a 4-day immersion into Franciscan spirituality. It's a retreat, though, so there's a lot more silence in it than what we've experienced. And it's 4 solid days. That's all people are doing. We ministered that one time when the two of us were ministering that. And we looked at each other and we said, this is it. This is the call. And so now we go out. We do a lot of work in Portland among various faith traditions. And we're also very willing to go anywhere to offer what we do. So if you have parishes or groups or, you know, and we don't just do this, Franciscan peace, we do lots of different things. We've done retreats on contemplative prayer. We've done retreats on how do you work and, you know, pray at the same time. And we've done retreats on creation. We've done all kinds of those kinds of things. And we do workshops too. So our current ministry is very viable. We feel that together, though we work each separately as well, but we feel that together we have something to offer an ecumenical group that neither of us can offer alone. I'm not married. I don't know what that's like. Sometimes I look at these children and I think, oh, thank God. And other times I'm sure that, you know, Gloria looks and says, wish I had that freedom without these children and this husband, you know. So, you know, besides that piece, I'm not from the Protestant tradition. I don't have that. So Gloria has that to offer that I don't have. Gloria's not from the Catholic tradition. She didn't have that to offer. And together we offer a Christian tradition. So that's who we are. We're equal in this ministry. We want to minister that. And that's why we think it works. So we have some handouts for you to sort of talk about that. And these handouts give you our names and addresses, our emails and phone numbers in case you would ever want to contact us again for anything. We're happy to be there for you if there's any workshop or whatever you might want to do. And at the bottom of that evaluation form that you have, the blue one, if you want to be on our mailing list for different kinds of retreats we give around the country, we'll be happy to send you flyers and things so you know what we're doing. On that list that you're receiving now, there are several things. And the first page of that list are the books. And then on the back side of that, you have the music we've used here. Then you have some websites that we know are good websites for Franciscan sources. You do a search on the internet with those. And then we talk about what we do each separately, and then what we do together, and giving the information about ourselves. The second page is a wonderful summary of the Franciscan spirit, probably the best I've ever seen. Okay. And by Will Short. He's the one that said it's not Franciscan unless you can have lunch with it. So that's just an excellent summary of what the Franciscan spirit is. And then the next page, the buff-colored page, it's just another explanation of the theological foundations for our Franciscan life and ministry. So that's for you. And if there's copies left over, you're certainly welcome to take more than one. Now, we were going to talk about the structure of Franciscan life. You know, how do these orders fit together, friars and sisters and all that? Some of you have asked us that, but we don't want to short-sight our final prayer here. So if you're still curious about that, you know, how do the sisters fit with the brothers, fit with the priests, and so on, if at 10 o'clock, when we're finished with our piece here, our final prayer, if you wish more information about that, you know, we'll come over to the dining room and sit with you and have coffee with you, and we can talk a little more about that piece. If you just want, some of you may be familiar with religious orders and how that works, and some of you may want to know more about that. So we'll be happy to do that over coffee. So we have time for a final prayer.
Our closing is also going to be a sending forth. And here is how that will happen. But I need to check in first. Has everybody put a scroll here in the center? Yes, wonderful.
No.
Okay, that's fine. Two more.
Yeah, those of you that haven't done it, you're right up there with Gloria and I.
Anyone else who has not? Whoops, one more, Mary Jo. So we have three. To do something that symbolically speaks of everything that we have spoke that lives what we have spoken about. And so here's what we hope can happen in terms of a real integration. Your scroll, your peace prayer, thank you, Mary Jo, is your commitment, very likely, on how to live, how to give meat, how to make it real, how to make it your hands and feet and heart dirty in the real world. That's the part of being a peacemaker. We're going to have you find a partner, somebody perhaps that you've had a good conversation with, somebody that you feel connected with throughout this week. It could be your very good friend that you came with, it can be your spouse, but it doesn't have to be. So, finding a partner. And then we're going to be playing a song called Teresa's Prayer. This is Saint Teresa. She was from the 16th century, so we're several hundred years after Francis and Claire. But even in her time, she recognized that the poverty of her era, not physical poverty, but the spiritual poverty, is if she and other people are not the hands and feet of Christ, then it ain't gonna happen. So she wrote a song, and we're going to listen to that text. And it will be played over and over again, allowing ample time for us to do this blessing. So while this song is being played, we are going to invite you to come up two by two. Find your peace prayer. Pick it up. Come together. And somehow give each other a blessing. I would hope that you could look one another in the eye, seeing the image of God right before you. You may do the sign of the cross, either on the forehead or in the hand. You may hug. You may say a verbal prayer. You may stand and hold hands with that person and say absolutely nothing. Something that is a giving of a blessing to that person. And then, after the blessing is done with your partner, recede to the side, because in the end, we're going to make a huge circle and hold hands. Is that clear? Choosing a partner, coming forward, picking up your scroll, standing and giving some kind of a blessing, and then moving somewhere on the outside. And Mary Jo and I will begin this just to model it. It's only one way to do a blessing. Do something that is authentic and real for you and your partner.
And you may want to find that partner now and, you know, be sitting next to them and pick up your scroll also. So we'll be fine if you go around the house.
That's a very good idea. Find your partner, get your scroll.
If it doesn't quite work out evenly, there can be a group of three if you need it. So, you know, see people. If someone doesn't have a partner, let us know.
Always the hardest.
Mary, you want to be a threesome?
threesomes are very good blessing groups.
Right. You're going to go with her.
So everyone is connected.
Sure, somewhere.
You absolutely have it. Before we begin this prayer, I want to express to you my deep gratitude for the gift of music that you have offered. It's not every group that Mary Jo and I minister with in which prayer can be deepened and experienced through song and through our voices and bodies. That's been a real gift. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for allowing prayer to be experienced in that way. Please join in singing this song as we bless one another.